Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. Today we're going to talk about the worst Supreme Court decision ever. The worst Supreme Court decision ever. I get asked about Supreme Court rulings. I mention them from time to time on here. And I've had a lot of people say, Steve, what's your favorite ruling? What's the worst ruling? And, you know, you could debate this stuff all day long, but I pretty much think that most people, when they hear the case I'm about to talk about, especially if you have never heard of this case before, it'll shock you that our Supreme Court ruled this way on something that could actually affect many people in this country. So I'm sure you know that the Supreme Court rules on all kinds of stuff, and sometimes the rulings might have nothing to do with you. They might never have anything to do with you. But the interesting thing is that this particular case, when I read it, every time I read it, it still ticks me off. And of course, you know, you might have your own opinion on a different Supreme Court case that's worse. But I think at this point we're splitting hairs because this has got to be among the worst. And it's simply a matter at that point, if you find one that you think is worse, then, you know, you can argue it all you want, but it's going to be close. Let's put it that way. It's going to be close. So the case that I nominate to be the worst Supreme Court case, and I'm talking about current cases. There have been bad cases years ago that were overturned. Obviously, those are bad cases because they got overturned. I'm talking about a case that's on the books right now. And of course, the case I'm talking about is Suzette Kelo versus New London. Suzette Kelo. In case you're wondering why this might ring a bell, there was a movie that came out about a year or two, maybe ago, a couple years ago, called Little Pink House. Little Pink House. And it tells this story. And what happened was Suzette Kelo lived in a town where, in Connecticut, they had decided that to, in an attempt to improve the economy of the area, they were going to just take a big portion of private property where people had homes and buy it from those people, level all the homes, and then allow a big corporation to come in and put a big factory there. And their thinking was that, you know, we can do this because we're the government. And the government, as you might guess, has some ability to sometimes take private property. And this is where it gets confusing because, you know, as you can imagine in the old days, they're putting a highway through some part of town and they need a piece of land to run the highway over. They would just take that land, compensate the owner, put the highway there. And people would be upset by that, but it's, you know, people understand that. They go, well, obviously, that's for the better good of the whole society that we have this highway or whatever it is. But here, the difference was they were leveling all these homes and giving the property, I mean, they were going to sell it on some level, to a corporation that's, you know, just a business. And, you know, at this point, is that really the same as taking the property to, like, say, run a railroad through it or something like that? So the Supreme Court said that that was perfectly okay to take that property for that purpose. So I'm going to read to you from the Justice Stevens opinion, because he was the majority opinion writer on this case. And he wrote, the question presented is whether the city's proposed disposition of this property qualifies as a public use within the meaning of the takings clause of the Fifth Amendment. So the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution says specifically, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So the suggestion there is, yeah, they can take your property for public use so long as they compensate you justly for public use. So he wrote, the city of New London sits at the junction of the Thames River and the Long Island Sound in southeastern Connecticut. Decades of economic decline led a state agency in 1990 to designate the city a distressed municipality. In 1996, the federal government closed its Naval Undersea Warfare Center, which had been located in the area as well, which had employed 1,500 people. And in 1998, the city's unemployment rate was nearly double that of the rest of the state, and its population of just under 24,000 residents was at its lowest since 1920. So there's no question that the area is going through some financial upheaval. And so along comes this state agency that says, hey, look, this area is under economic distress. And one way we think we can help is, we're from the government, we're here to help. One way we can help is we're going to take this area that this big corporation wants to use for a factory and buy it from the homeowners and just level all the houses and then sell this piece of property to this company. And one of the people whose homes was on this piece of property was Suzette Kelo. And Suzette Kelo had lived in the Fort Trumbull area since 1997. She'd made extensive improvements to her house. which she said she prized for its water view. There's another petitioner named Wilhelmina Derry, who'd been there since 1918, and she lived there her entire life. Her husband is also a petitioner in the case, had lived in the house since they married 60 years ago. In all, 9 petitioners owned 15 properties in this Fort Trumbull area. 10 of the parcels were occupied by the owner or a family member. The other 5 were held as investment properties. There is no allegation that any of these properties is blighted or in poor condition. So these aren't houses we're knocking down because they're eyesores. These aren't houses we're knocking down because, well, there's an abandoned ramshackle building on this piece of property that we could put to better use if we put something useful there. There were useful things there. People's homes were there. Okay? These are homes that people lived in. They loved their homes. You know, this whole man's home is his castle or her castle. So in December 2000, petitioners brought this action in the New London Superior Court, and they claimed, among other things, that the taking of their properties would violate the public use restrictions of the Fifth Amendment. They had a 7-day bench trial, and there the court granted a permanent restraining order prohibiting the taking of the properties located in this area. And I won't get into details because a couple different parcels are fighting over different standards and so on. But the thing is that the local court said, you know something, this is wrong. You can't just take this property because you have a different use for it. It's not the same as what the Constitution requires for it to be that, you know, public use. So the Supreme Court, in its opinion, wrote that 2 polar propositions are perfectly clear. On the one hand, it has long been accepted that the government may not take the property of A for the sole purpose of transferring it to another private party, B. On the other hand, it is equally clear that a state may transfer property from one private party to another if future use by the public is the purpose of the taking. The condemnation of land for a railroad with common carrier duties is a familiar example. Neither of these propositions, however, determines the disposition of this case. And again, they weren't talking about putting a highway there or a train tracks there. They were literally talking about leveling it and giving the property or selling it to a private corporation. You know, a corporation, I mean, they might have stockholders, but the point is that it's not the government. It's not the public. It's a corporation that's going to be getting this. So Stevens writes, as for the first proposition, the city would no doubt be forbidden from taking petitioner's land for the purpose of conferring a private benefit on a particular private party. So he goes, that would be absolutely wrong. There's no question that that would be wrong. And most people agree. It wouldn't make any sense for the government to be able to say, you know something, we're going to take your property and give it to him. We're going to take his property and give it to her. I mean, that would obviously run afoul of the Constitution, the takings clause. It has to be for a public purpose. So Stevens wrote, the disposition of this case therefore turns on the question whether the city's development plan serves a public purpose. Now, here's the part where this gets sketchy, because he starts defining loosely what public use or public purpose is, okay? And what previously people had always thought was, yeah, it's got to be something that's obviously apparent benefit to the public as a whole. And what the people in Connecticut were arguing, the people who liked this idea, they're saying, well, hey, wait a second. If we take this property and clear it and then give it to this corporation in a, you know, sweetheart deal, it's going to create thousands of jobs. It's going to create millions of dollars in tax revenue. And, you know, it's going to wind up helping the state eventually and the people of the state by the jobs and the taxes that are going to pour into this project. Now, we have the benefit of hindsight at this point, but we can look back and say, do these things ever really work? You know, think about all the times that a city has bought a stadium and built a stadium for a team and cut either great tax breaks or helped them build the stadium. And then it turns out that when accountants do the math, they go, wait a second, the city, the state, whoever it is, didn't actually benefit from this the way they thought they would. And in fact, it's almost always optimistic projections being made by the people in charge when they should be making pessimistic projections, because those are the ones that always seem to come true. That's how life is. Life is like that. So Stevens said that the taking of the property, including Suzette Kilo's, was going to benefit the public through the increased taxes and jobs and so on, and therefore it was legal. And I'm going to read the final closing part of the majority opinion, where he wrote, "This court's authority, however, extends only to determining whether the city's proposed condemnations are for a public use within the meaning of the Fifth Amendment. Because over a century of our case law interpreting that provision dictates a yes to that answer, that question, we cannot grant petitioners relief." That was the petitioners who wanted to stop this from going forward. So the Supreme Court affirmed the ruling of the Connecticut Supreme Court, which had ruled that this was perfectly acceptable. So Connecticut Supreme Court said it was good. The U.S. Supreme Court said it was good. And this, I believe, is a horrible, horrible ruling, because right now, if somebody in a position of power looks at your house and goes, you know, I think a business would make better use of that property where your house is, and that business is going to hire people and pay taxes, never mind the fact that you're living in your house, you're paying taxes too, but hey, we're going to put a business there that's going to hire people and pay taxes, that's a public use, therefore we can take your house. That's what the majority said. Now, I'll tell you that there's a very strong dissenting opinion, as you might imagine, from Justice Thomas, Clarence Thomas. Now, it's a beautifully written dissent. It's rather lengthy. I'm not going to get into all of it because I don't have that kind of time. But I'm going to point out that he notes, the takings clause, one component of the protection provided by the takings clause is that the government can take property only if it provides just compensation for the taking, but the takings clause also prohibits the government from taking property except for public use. And no one's arguing that they offered Suzette Kilo money for her property. The question is, did they have the right reason for demanding it from her? And Thomas points out that if you don't look at both halves of that, then the statute or the amendment actually has no meaning. So he writes, the public use clause, in short, embodied the framers' understanding that property is a natural fundamental right prohibiting the government from taking property from A and giving it to B. And he even points out that the majority put that in their opinion. He's kind of pointing out how silly it is that they say it shouldn't do this, and that's what they do. So the takings clause is a prohibition, not a grant of power. And this is something a lot of people point out to me if I speak a little less precisely sometimes about rights, is I'll say that, you know, the Bill of Rights lists a bunch of rights. And people say, but those rights existed before the Bill of Rights existed. And that's true. The Bill of Rights memorializes that these rights exist and we have these rights. Some people say we get these rights from the Bill of Rights. Well, that's what you point to when you say, if somebody says, what makes you think you've got the right to free speech? You don't say it's a God-given right, because in court you can't argue that. You say it's the First Amendment. People understand that. It's in writing. We all go look at it. And that's accepted as the law in our country because it's part of the Constitution. And the Constitution is the basis of our laws in our nation. So he points out that, you know, the Fifth Amendment, part of the Constitution, talks about how important your fundamental natural rights are to own property. And the takings clause is a prohibition, not a grant of power. Okay. So he says that instead, the government may take property only when necessary and proper to the exercise of an expressly enumerated power. Okay. And he starts going through this long historical explanation about how you have to look at what gives the government the right to do something, not what gives you the right to object, okay? And that's, it seems like a fine line to some people, but that's actually the case. So Thomas's dissent is very, very powerful, but he ends by saying the consequences of today's decision are not difficult to predict and promise to be harmful. So-called urban renewal programs provide some compensation for the properties they take, but no compensation is possible for the subjective value of these lands to the individuals displaced and the indignity inflicted by uprooting them from their homes. And that's the thing. The idea that your home is possibly something that can be priced. I can put a price tag on your home. If you tell me the zip code your home is in, you let me see photographs of your home, tell me how many square feet it is, how many bathrooms it is, I can predict very, very closely what your house is worth on the open market. But the problem is your house might not be for sale. No one can make you sell your house, at least until this. So the idea that everything's got a price tag on it is actually a moot point, because what's more important is, were you planning on selling your house? Think of all the memories you have in your house. Think about all the time you spent there. Your house has more value to you than to somebody else who's never lived there, even if they're willing to pay you what the price of the house is, okay? Your house, your home is your castle, and you've got the right to think that way. So I think Thomas is right when he wrote, the consequences of today's decision are not difficult to predict, and they promise to be harmful. So it's kind of crazy. But, you know, the Kelo case stands for the proposition that if somebody higher up, probably at a state level or possibly federal level, looks at your property, whether it's vacant property, investment property, or the home you live in, and they say, you know something, we can think of a better use to put your property to, and the better use is going to benefit the public. And the second we can say it benefits the public, then we can take it from you, cut you a check for what we think it's worth, not compensating you for the memories, the value, and anything else that you have tied up with it emotionally. And you better leave and get off your property, because the government's coming to do something better with it. So just so you know, the property that Suzette Kelo's house was on was never developed. It turns out that the corporation that had talked about using that property changed their mind. It happens. People change their minds all the time. So the 3,000 jobs never materialized. The 1.2 million in tax revenue never happened. The state spent $78 million on the property, I believe. And the question, of course, is when they spent the millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer money on the property, which to this day sits empty, you look at it and you go, it's a boondoggle. The state came in, spent all this tax dollar money, money that came from taxpayers. They wasted the tax money. The property now sits vacant, not being used for a better purpose. Didn't create thousands of jobs. Didn't create tax revenue. So what good was any of this? It's a waste of time. And that's why I say Kelo versus the City of New London, in my opinion, is the worst Supreme Court opinion on the books right now. I might address some others down the road. We'll see. But that one right now gets my vote. Questions or comments below. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.